2. Bridge 4. Our first clue was the Parshendi. Even weeks before they abandoned their pursuit of the gem hearts, their pattern of fighting changed. They lingered on the plateaus after battles, as if waiting for something. From the personal journal of Navani Kolin, Yesises, 1174.
Breath. A man's breath was his life, exhaled bit by bit back into the world. Kaladin breathed deeply, eyes closed, and for a time that was all he could hear. His own life. In, out, to the beating of the thunder in his chest. Breath. His own little storm. Outside, the rain had stopped. Kaladin remained sitting in the darkness. When kings and wealthy light eyes died, their bodies weren't burned like those of common men. Instead, they were soul-cast into statues of stone or metal, forever frozen. The Dark Eyes' bodies were burned. They became smoke, to rise toward the heavens and whatever waited there, like a burned prayer. Breath. The breath of a Light Eyes was no different from that of a Dark Eyes. No more sweet, no more free. The breath of kings and slaves mingled, to be breathed by men again, over and over. Kaladin stood up and opened his eyes. He'd spent the high storm in the darkness of this small room alongside Bridge 4's new barrack. Alone. He walked to the door, but stopped. He rested his fingers on a cloak he knew hung from a hook there. In the darkness, he could not make out its deep blue color, nor the Kolin glyph, in the shape of Dalinar's sigil, on the back. It seemed that every change in his life had been marked by a storm. This was a big one. He shoved open the door and stepped out into the light as a free man. He left the cloak for now. Bridge 4 cheered him as he emerged. They had gone out to bathe and shave in the riddens of the storm, as was their custom. The line was almost done, Rock having shaved each of the men in turn. The large horn-eater hummed to himself as he worked the razor over Dre's balding head. The air smelled wet from the rain, and a washed-out fire pit nearby was the only trace of the stew the group had shared the night before. In many ways, this place wasn't so different from the lumber yards as men had recently escaped. The long, rectangular stone barracks were much the same. Soul-cast, rather than having been built by hand, they looked like enormous stone logs. These, however, each had a couple of smaller rooms on the sides for sergeants, with their own doors that opened to the outside. They'd been painted with the symbols of the platoons using them before. Kaladin's men would have to paint over those.
Moash! Kaladin called. Scar! Teft!
The three jogged toward him, splashing through puddles left by the storm. They wore the clothing of bridgemen, simple trousers cut off at the knees and leather vests over bare chests. Scar was up and mobile despite the wound to his foot, and he tried rather obviously not to limp. For now, Kaladin didn't order him to bed rest. The wound wasn't too bad, and he needed the man.
I want to look at what we've got, Kaladin said, leading them away from the barrack.
It would house 50 men along with a half-dozen sergeants. More barracks flanked it on either side. Kaladin had been given an entire block of them, 20 buildings, to house his new battalion of former bridgemen. 20 buildings. That Dalinar should so easily be able to find a block of 20 buildings for the bridgemen bespoke a terrible truth. The cost of Satius's betrayal. Thousands of men dead. Indeed, female scribes worked near some of the barracks, supervising parchmen who carried out heaps of clothing and other personal effects. The possessions of the deceased. Not a few of those scribes looked on with red eyes and frazzled composures. Satius had just created thousands of new widows in Dalinar's camp, and likely as many orphans. If Kaladin had needed another reason to hate that man, he found it here, manifest in the suffering of those whose husbands had trusted him on the battlefield. In Kaladin's eyes, there was no sin greater than the betrayal of one's allies in battle.
except perhaps for the betrayal of one's own men, of murdering them after they risked their lives to protect you. Kaladin felt an immediate flare of anger at thoughts of Amaram and what he'd done. His slave brand seemed to burn again on his forehead. Amaram and Satius, two men in Kaladin's life who would, at some point, need to pay for the things they'd done. Preferably that payment would come with severe interest. Kaladin continued to walk with Teft, Moash, and Scar. These barracks, which were slowly being emptied of personal effects, were also crowded with bridgemen. They looked much like the men of Bridge Four, same vests and knee trousers. And yet in some other ways they couldn't have looked less like the men of Bridge Four. Shaggy-haired, with beards that hadn't been trimmed in months, they bore hollow eyes that didn't seem to blink often enough, slumped backs, expressionless faces. Each man among them seemed to sit alone, even when surrounded by his fellows.
"I remember that feeling," Scar said softly.
The short, wiry man had sharp features and silvering hair at the temples, despite being in his early 30s.
"I don't want to, but I do."
"We're supposed to turn those into an army?" Moash asked.
"Kaladin did it to Bridge Four, didn't he?"
Teft asked, wagging a finger at Moash.
"He'll do it again."
"Transforming a few dozen men is different from doing the same for hundreds," Moash said, kicking aside a fallen branch from the high storm.
Tall and solid, Moash had a scar on his chin, but no slave brand on his forehead. He walked straight-backed, with his chin up. Save for those dark brown eyes of his, he could have passed for an officer. Kaladin led the three past barrack after barrack, doing a quick count. Nearly 1,000 men, and though he'd told them yesterday that they were now free, and could return to their old lives if they wished, few seemed to want to do anything but sit. Though there had originally been 40 bridge crews, many had been slaughtered during the latest assault, and others had already been short-manned.
"We'll combine them into 20 crews," Kaladin said, "of about 50 each."
Above, Syl fluttered down as a ribbon of light and zipped around him. The men gave no sign of seeing her. She would be invisible to them.
"We can't teach each of these 1,000 personally, not at first. We'll want to train the more eager ones among them, then send them back to lead and train their own teams."
"I suppose," Teft said, scratching his chin.
The oldest of the bridgemen, he was one of the few who retained a beard. Most of the others had shaved theirs off as a mark of pride, something to separate the men of Bridge Four from common slaves. Teft kept his neat for the same reason. It was light brown where it hadn't gone gray, and he wore it short and square, almost like an Arden's. Moash grimaced, looking at the bridgemen.
"You assume some of them will be more eager, Kaladin. They all look the same level of despondent to me."
"Some will still have fight in them," Kaladin said, continuing on back toward Bridge Four. "The ones who joined us at the fire last night for a start.
Teft, I'll need you to choose others. Organize and combine crews, then pick 40 men, two from each team, to be trained first. You'll be in command of that training. Those 40 will be the seed we use to help the rest."
"I suppose I can do that."
"Good. I'll give you a few men to help."
"A few?" Teft asked. "I could use more than a few."
"You'll have to make do with a few," Kaladin said, stopping on the path and turning westward, toward the king's complex beyond the camp wall.
It rose on a hillside overlooking the rest of the war camps.
"Most of us are going to be needed to keep Delanar Kolin alive."
Moash and the others stopped beside him. Kaladin squinted at the palace. It certainly didn't look grand enough to house a king. Out here, everything was just stone and more stone.
"You are willing to trust Dalinar?" Moash asked.
"He gave up his shard blade for us," Kaladin said.
"He owed it to us," Scar said with a grunt.
"We saved his storming life."
"It could just have been posturing," Moash said, folding his arms. "Political games, him and Satius trying to manipulate each other."
Syl alighted on Kaladin's shoulder, taking the form of a young woman with a flowing, filmy dress, all blue-white. She held her hands clasped together as she looked up at the king's complex where Dalinar Kholin had gone to plan. He'd told Kaladin that he was going to do something that would anger a lot of people.
"I'm going to take away their games." "We need to keep that man alive," Kaladin said, looking back to the others. "I don't know if I trust him, but he's the only person on these plains who has shown even a hint of compassion for Bridgman. If he dies, do you want to guess how long it will take his successor to sell us back to Sadeus?"
Scar snorted in derision.
"I'd like to see them try with a Knight Radiant at our head."
"I'm not a Radiant."
"Fine. Whatever," Scar said. "Whatever you are, it will be tough for them to take us from you."
"You think I can fight them all, Scar?" Kaladin said, meeting the older man's eyes. "Dozens of Shardbearers? Tens of thousands of troops? You think one man can do that?"
"Not one man," Scar said, stubborn. "You."
"I'm not a god, Scar," Kaladin said. "I can't hold back the weight of 10 armies.
He turned to the other two.
"We decided to stay here on the Shattered Plains."
"Why?"
"What good would it do to run?"
Teft asked, shrugging.
"Even as free men, we'd just end up conscripted into one army or another out there in the hills. Either that, or we'd end up starving."
Moash nodded.
"This is as good a place as any, so long as we're free."
"Dalinar Kholin is our best hope for a real life," Kaladin said.
"Bodyguards, not conscripted labor. Free men, despite the brands on our foreheads. Nobody else will give us that. If we want freedom, we need to keep Dalinar Kholin alive."
"And the assassin in white?" Scar asked softly.
They had heard of what the man was doing around the world, slaughtering kings and high princes in all nations. The news was the buzz of the war camps ever since reports had started trickling in through Spanreed. The Emperor of Aesir, dead. Yaakoved, in turmoil. A half dozen other nations left without a ruler.
"He already killed our king," Kaladin said. "Old Gavilar was the assassin's first murder. We'll just have to hope he's done here. Either way, we protect Dalinar. At all costs."
They nodded one by one, though those nods were grudging. He didn't blame them. Trusting Light Eyes hadn't gotten them far. Even Moash, who had once spoken well of Dalinar, now seemed to have lost his fondness for the man. Or any Light Eyes. In truth, Kaladin was a little surprised at himself and the trust he felt. But Stormit still liked Dalinar. That carried weight.
"We're weak right now," Kaladin said, lowering his voice. "But if we play along with this for a time, protecting Kholin, we'll be paid handsomely. I'll be able to train you, really train you, as soldiers and officers. Beyond that, we'll be able to teach these others. We could never make it on our own out there as 2 dozen former bridgemen. But what if we were instead a highly skilled mercenary force of 1,000 soldiers, equipped with the finest gear in the war camps? If worst comes to worst, and we have to abandon the camps, I'd like to do so as a cohesive unit, hardened and impossible to ignore. Give me a year with this 1,000, and I can have it done."
"Now that plan I like," Moash said. "Do I get to learn to use a sword?"
"We're still Dark Eyes, Moash."
"Not you," Scar said from his other side. "I saw your eyes during the—"
"Stop," Kaladin said. He took a deep breath. "Just stop. No more talk of that."
Scar fell silent.
"I am going to name you officers," Kaladin said to them. "You three, along with Sigzil and Rock. You'll be lieutenants."
"Dark-eyed lieutenants?" Scar said.
The rank was commonly used for the equivalent of sergeants in companies made up only of Light Eyes.
"Dalinar made me a captain," Kaladin said. "The highest rank he said he dared commission a Dark Eyes. Well, I need to come up with a full command structure for 1,000 men, and we're going to need something between sergeant and captain. That means appointing you five as lieutenants. I think Dalinar will let me get away with it. We'll make master sergeants if we need another rank. Rock is going to be quartermaster and in charge of food for the 1,000. I'll appoint Lopin his second. Teft,
You'll be in charge of training. Sigsel will be our clerk. He's the only one who can read glyphs. Moash and Scar?
He glanced toward the two men. One short, the other tall. They walked the same way, with a smooth gait, dangerous, spears always on their shoulders. They were never without. Of all the men he'd trained in Bridge Four, only these two had instinctively understood. They were killers, like Kaladin himself.
We three, Kaladin told them, are each going to focus on watching Dalinar Kholin. Whenever possible, I want one of us three personally guarding him. Often one of the other two will watch his sons. But make no mistake, the Blackthorn is the man we're going to keep alive. At all costs. He is our only guarantee of freedom for Bridge Four.
The others nodded.
Good, Kaladin said. Let's go get the rest of the men. It's time for the world to see you as I do.
By common agreement, Hopper sat down to get his tattoo first. The gap-toothed man was one of the very first who had believed in Kaladin. Kaladin remembered that day, exhausted after a bridge run, wanting to simply lie down and stare. Instead, he'd chosen to save Hopper rather than letting him die. Kaladin had saved himself that day, too. The rest of Bridge Four stood around Hopper in the tent, watching in silence as the tattooist worked carefully on his forehead, covering up the scar of his slave's brand with the glyphs Kaladin had provided. Hopper winced now and then at the pain of the tattoo, but he kept a grin on his face. Kaladin had heard that you could cover a scar with a tattoo, and it ended up working quite well. Once the tattoo ink was injected, the glyphs drew the eye, and you could barely tell that the skin beneath was scarred. Once the process was finished, the tattooist provided a mirror for Hopper to look into. The bridgeman touched his forehead hesitantly. The skin was red from the needles, but the dark tattoo perfectly covered the slave brand.
What does it say?
Hopper asked softly, tears in his eyes.
Freedom, Sigsel said before Kaladin could reply. The glyph means freedom.
The smaller ones above, Kaladin said. Say the date you were freed and the one who freed you. Even if you lose your writ of freedom, anyone who tries to imprison you for being a runaway can easily find proof that you are not. They can go to Dalinar Kholin's scribes, who keep a copy of your writ.
Hopper nodded.
That's good.
But it's not good enough.
Add Bridge Four to it.
Freedom, Bridge Four.
To imply you were freed from Bridge Four?
No, sir. I wasn't freed from Bridge Four. I was freed by it. I wouldn't trade my time there for anything.
It was crazy talk. Bridge Four had been death. Scores of men had been slaughtered running that cursed bridge. Even after Kaladin had determined to save the men, he'd lost far too many. Hopper would have been a fool not to take any opportunity to escape. And yet he sat stubbornly until Kaladin drew out the proper glyphs for the tattooist, a calm, sturdy, dark-eyed woman who looked like she could have lifted a bridge all on her own. She settled down in her stool and began adding the two glyphs to Hopper's forehead, tucked right below the freedom glyph. She spent the process explaining, again, how the tattoo would be sore for days, and how Hopper would need to care for it. He accepted the new tattoos with a grin on his face. Pure foolishness, but the others nodded in agreement, clasping Hopper on the arm. Once Hopper was done, Scar sat quickly, eager, demanding the same full set of tattoos. Kaladin stepped back, folding his arms and shaking his head. Outside the tent, a bustling marketplace sold and bought. The war camp was really a city, built up inside the crater-like rim of some enormous rock formation. The prolonged war on the shattered plains had attracted merchants of all varieties, along with tradesmen, artists, and even families with children. Moash stood nearby, face troubled, watching the tattooist. He wasn't the only one in the bridge crew who didn't have a slave brand. Teft didn't either. They had been made bridgemen without technically being made slaves first. It happened frequently in Sarius's camp, where running bridges was a punishment that one could earn for all manner of infractions.
If you don't have a slave's brand, Kaladin said loudly to the men, you don't need to get the tattoo. You're still one of us.
No, Rock said. I will get this thing.
He insisted on sitting down after Scar and getting the tattoo right on his forehead, though he had no slave brand. Indeed, every one of the men without a slave brand, Beld and Teft included, sat down and got the tattoo on their foreheads. Only Moash abstained and had the tattoo placed on his upper arm. Good. Unlike most of them, he wouldn't have to go about with a proclamation of former slavery in plain view. Moash stood up from the seat, and another took his place, a man with red and black skin in a marbled pattern like stone. Bridge Four had a lot of variety, but Shen was in a class all his own. A Parsh man.
I can't tattoo him, the artist said. He's property.
Kaladin opened his mouth to object, but the other bridgeman jumped in first.
He's been freed like us, Teft said.
One of the team, Haber said. Give him the tattoo or you won't see a sphere from any of us.
He blushed after he said it, glancing at Kaladin, who would be paying for all this, using spheres granted by Dalinar Kholin. Other bridgemen spoke out, and the tattoo artist finally sighed and gave in. She pulled over her stool and began working on Shen's forehead.
You won't even be able to see it,
she grumbled, though Sigzil's skin was nearly as dark as Shen's, and the tattoo showed up fine on him. Eventually, Shen looked in the mirror, then stood up. He glanced at Kaladin and nodded. Shen didn't say much, and Kaladin didn't know what to make of the man. It was actually easy to forget about him, usually trailing along silently at the back of the group of bridgemen. Invisible. Parshmen were often that way. Shen finished, only Kaladin himself remained. He sat down next and closed his eyes. The pain of the needles was a lot sharper than he'd anticipated. After a short time, the tattooist started cursing under her breath. Kaladin opened his eyes as she wiped a rag on his forehead. What is it? He asked.
The ink won't take, she said. I've never seen anything like it. When I wipe your forehead, the ink all just comes right off. The tattoo won't stay.
Kaladin sighed, realizing he had a little stormlight raging in his veins. He hadn't even noticed drawing it in, but he seemed to be getting better and better at holding it. He frequently took in a little these days while walking about. Holding stormlight was like filling a wineskin. If you filled it to bursting and unstopped it, it would squirt out quickly, then slow to a trickle. Same with the light. He banished it, hoping the tattoo artist didn't notice when he breathed out a small cloud of glowing smoke. Try again, he said as she got out new ink. This time the tattoo took. Kaladin sat through the process, teeth clenched against the pain, then looked up as she held the mirror for him. The face that looked back at Kaladin seemed alien. Clean-shaven, hair pulled back from his face for the tattooing, the slave brands covered up and, for the moment, forgotten. Can I be this man again? He thought, reaching up, touching his cheek. This man died, didn't he? Syl landed on his shoulder, joining him in looking into the mirror.
Life before death, Kaladin, she whispered.
He unconsciously sucked in stormlight. Just a little, a fraction of a sphere's worth. It flowed through his veins like a wave of pressure, like winds trapped in a small enclosure. The tattoo on his forehead melted. His body shoved out the ink, which started to drip down his face. The tattooist cursed again and grabbed her rag. Kaladin was left with the image of those glyphs melting away. Freedom dissolved, and underneath the violent scars of his captivity, dominated by a branded glyph. Shash. Dangerous. The woman wiped his face.
I don't know why this is happening. I thought it would stay that time.
It's all right, Kaladin said, taking the rag as he stood, finishing the cleanup. He turned to face the rest of them, bridgemen, now soldiers. The scars haven't finished with me yet, it appears. I'll try again another time. They nodded. He'd have to explain to them later what was happening. They knew of his abilities. Let's go, Kaladin said to them, tossing a small bag of spheres to the tattooist, then taking his spear from beside the tent entrance. The others joined him, spears to shoulders. They didn't need to be armed while in camp, but he wanted them to get used to the idea that they were free to carry weapons now. The market outside was crowded and vibrant. The tents, of course, would have been taken down and stowed during last night's high storm, but they'd already sprung up again. Perhaps because he was thinking about Shen, he noticed the parchmen. He picked out dozens of them with a cursory glance, helping set up a few last tents, carrying purchases for Light Eyes, helping shop owners stack their wares.
What do they think of this war on the Shattered Plains? Kaladin wondered. A war to defeat and perhaps subjugate the only free parchment in the world.
Would that he could get an answer out of Shen regarding questions like that. It seemed all he ever got from the parchment were shrugs. Kaladin led his men through the market, which seemed far friendlier than the one in Satius's camp. Though people stared at the bridgemen, nobody sneered, and the haggling at nearby stands, while energetic, didn't progress to shouting. There even seemed to be fewer urchins and beggars.
You just want to believe that, Kaladin thought. You want to believe Dalinar is the man everyone says he is, the honorable Light Eyes of the stories. But everyone said the same things about Amaram.
As they walked, they did pass some soldiers. Too few. Men who had been on duty back in the camp when the others had gone on the disastrous assault where Satius had betrayed Dalinar. As they passed one group patrolling the market, Kaladin caught two men at their front raising their hands before themselves, crossed at the wrist.
How had they learned Bridge Four's old salute and so quickly?
These men didn't do it as a full salute, just a small gesture, but they nodded their heads to Kaladin and his men as they passed. Suddenly, the more calm nature of the market took on another cast to Kaladin. Perhaps this wasn't simply the order and organization of Dalinar's army. There was an air of quiet dread over this war camp. Thousands had been lost to Satius's betrayal. Everyone here had probably known a man who had died out on those plateaus, and everyone probably wondered if the conflict between the two high princes would escalate.
"It's nice to be seen as a hero, isn't it?"
Sigzil asked, walking beside Kaladin and watching another group of soldiers pass by.
"How long will the goodwill last, do you think?" Moash asked. "How long before they resent us?"
"Ha!"
Rock, towering behind him, clapped Moash on the shoulder.
"No complaining today. You do this thing too much. Do not make me kick you. I do not like kicking. It hurts my toes."
"Kick me?" Moash snorted. "You won't even carry a spear, Rock."
"Spears are not for kicking complainers, but big unco-lucky feet like mine, it is what they were made for. Ha! This thing is obvious, yes?"
Kaladin led the men out of the market and to a large rectangular building near the barracks. This one was constructed of worked stone rather than soul-cast stone, allowing for more finesse in design. Such buildings were becoming more common in the war camps as more masons arrived. Soul casting was quicker, but also more expensive and less flexible. He didn't know much about it, only that soul casters were limited in what they could do. That was why the barracks were all essentially identical. Kaladin led his men inside the towering building to the counter, where a grizzled man with a belly that stretched to next week supervised a few parchmen, stacking bolts of blue cloth. Rind, the Kolin head quartermaster to whom Kaladin had sent instructions the night before. Rind was light-eyed, but was known as a tenor, a lowly rank barely above dark eyes.
"Ah!"
Rind said, speaking with a high-pitched voice that did not match his girth.
"You're here, finally. I've got them all out for you, Captain. Everything I have left."
"Left?" Moash asked.
"Uniforms of the Kobold Guard. I've commissioned some new ones, but this is what stock remained."
Rind grew more subdued.
"Didn't expect to need so many so soon, you see."
He looked Moash up and down, then handed him a uniform and pointed to a stall for changing. Moash took it.
"We're going to wear our leather jerkins over these?"
"Ha!"
Rind said.
"The ones tied with so much bone you looked like some western skull-bearer on feast day? I've heard of that, but no. Bright Lord Dalinar says you're each to be outfitted with breastplates, steel caps, new spears. Chainmail for the battlefield if you need it.
For now, Kaladin said. Uniforms will do.
I think I'll look silly in this, Moash grumbled, but walked over to change.
Rind distributed the uniforms to the men. He gave Shen a strange look, but delivered the parshmen a uniform without complaint. The bridgemen gathered in an eager bunch, jabbering with excitement as they unfolded their uniforms. It had been a long time since any of them had worn anything other than bridgeman leathers or slave wraps. They stopped talking when Moash stepped out. These were newer uniforms of a more modern style than Kaladin had worn in his previous military service. Stiff blue trousers and black boots polished to a shine. A buttoned white shirt, only the edges of its collar and cuffs extending beyond the jacket, which came down to the waist and buttoned closed beneath the belt.
"Now there's a soldier," the quartermaster said with a laugh. "Still think you look silly?"
He gestured for Moash to inspect his reflection in the mirror on the wall. Moash fixed his cuffs and actually blushed. Kaladin had rarely seen the man so out of sorts.
"No," Moash said. "I don't."
The others moved eagerly and began changing. Some went to the stalls at the side, but most didn't care. They were bridgemen and slaves. They'd spent most of their recent lives being paraded about in loincloths or little more. Teft had his on before anyone else and knew to do up the buttons in the right places.
"Been a long time," he whispered, buckling his belt. "Don't know that I deserve to wear something like this again."
"This is what you are, Teft," Kaladin said.
"Don't let the slave rule you."
Teft grunted, affixing his combat knife in its place on his belt.
"And you, son? When are you going to admit what you are?"
"I have.
To us. Not to everyone else."
"Don't start this again."
"I'll storming start whatever I want,"
Teft snapped. He leaned in, speaking softly.
"At least until you give me a real answer. You're a Surgebinder. You're not a Radiant yet, but you're going to be one when this is all blown through. The others are right to push you. Why don't you go have a hike up to that Dalinar fellow, suck in some stormlight, and make him recognize you as a Light Eyes?"
Kaladin glanced at the men in a muddled jumble as they tried to get the uniforms on, an exasperated Rind explaining to them how to do up the coats.
"Everything I've ever had, Teft," Kaladin whispered, "the Light Eyes have taken from me. My family, my brother, my friends. More. More than you can imagine. They see what I have and they take it."
He held up his hand and could faintly make out a few glowing wisps trailing from his skin since he knew what to look for.
"They'll take it. If they can find out what I do, they'll take it."
"Now how in Kalek's breath would they do that?"
"I don't know," Kaladin said. "I don't know, Teft, but I can't help feeling panic when I think about it. I can't let them have this. Can't let them take it, or you men, from me. We remain quiet about what I can do. No more talk of it."
Teft grumbled as the other men finally got themselves sorted out, though Lopin, one-armed with his empty sleeve turned inside out and pushed in so it didn't hang down, prodded at the patch on his shoulder.
"What's this?"
"It's the insignia of the Cobalt Guard," Kaladin said. "Dalinar Kolin's personal bodyguard."
"They're dead, Gonsho," Lopin said. "We aren't them."
"Yeah,"
Scar agreed. To Rin's horror, he got out his knife and cut the patch free.
"We're Bridge Four."
"Bridge Four was your prison," Kaladin protested.
"Doesn't matter," Scar said. "We're Bridge Four."
The others agreed, cutting off the patches, tossing them to the ground. Teft nodded and did likewise.
"We'll protect the Blackthorn, but we're not just going to replace what he had before. We're our own crew."
Kaladin rubbed his forehead, but this was what he had accomplished in bringing them together, galvanizing them into a cohesive unit.
"I'll draw up a glyph pair insignia for you to use," he told Rind. "You'll have to commission new patches."
The portly man sighed as he gathered up the discarded patches.
"I suppose. I've got your uniform over there, Captain. A dark-eyed captain. Who would have thought it possible? You'll be the only one in the army. The only one ever, so far as I know.
He didn't seem to find it offensive. Kaladin had little experience with low-don light eyes like Rind, though they were very common in the war camps. In his hometown, there had only been the city lord's family, of upper-middle don, and the dark eyes. It hadn't been until he'd reached Amaram's army that he'd realized there was an entire spectrum of light eyes, many of whom worked common jobs and scrambled for money just like ordinary people. Kaladin walked over to the last bundle on the counter. His uniform was different. It included a blue waistcoat and a double-breasted blue long coat, the lining white, the buttons of silver. The long coat was meant to hang open despite the rows of buttons down each side. He'd seen such uniforms frequently, on light eyes.
"Bridge 4," he said, cutting the Cobalt Guard insignia from the shoulder and tossing it to the counter with the others.